Welcome to Ticklish Business, the podcast devoted to honoring and deconstructing the world of classic cinema. As always, I'm your host, Kristen Lopez. This week, I'm joined by special guest Ansley Gordon as she sits down to talk to me about some of our favorite unsolved classic Hollywood deaths. So let's skip the intro and just go right into the discussion. A quick addendum. I know I say in the opening that this is our second Halloween episode. Technically, scheduling made this the third, so please, no need to send me emails saying that I don't know how to count. I definitely got these two confused, but let's kick things over to me and Ainsley.
Okay, listeners, our second spooky episode of 2017 sees us talking about what we all know about classic cinema is that it involves dead people. But we're talking about death in a different element, because we are talking about unsolved, or at least questionable, classic movie deaths. And I am joined by the fantastic Ansley Gordon of the Hollywoodland Unsolved podcast. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I am awesome. Thank you so much for agreeing to be on the podcast. I have a lot of people who are excited to hear you. But in case people don't know who you are, which is horrible because they should, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself and your podcast?
First of all, thank you everybody for listening to this episode. I'm sure Kristen is thankful as well. I am an actor, and I realized right after I moved to LA that I lived less than a mile from the house where they think the Black Dahlia was murdered. And so I just started researching it, and then it turned into this conversation I could have with anyone about this murder. And then I watched that Robert Durst documentary. Have you seen that?
The Jinx. That is amazing.
It's so good. It's so good. And I realized that I really am interested in these unsolved true crime cases. I personally like ones where everyone's already dead, so I don't feel threatened by talking about them.
Nobody's going to haunt you unless it's ghosts or a thing.
Yeah. Which, I mean, they might be. So my fiance is a graphic designer, and I went to him and I said, okay, so I have an idea for a podcast. Think Nancy Drew grew up and moved to old Hollywood and started a podcast. I need a logo. I need a website. I need maps because I'm going to do like a interactive thing. And he was like, okay. And then now a year later, like my show has taken on a life of its own. And it takes a lot of work because I do it all myself. I don't have any like researchers or anything. And the LAPD crime hotline won't take my calls anymore.
That's how you know you've arrived.
For sure. When people are like, Ansley, please stop calling. We're good. And I was trying to get Steve Hodel on for the Black Dahlia episode. And he originally said yes. And I have like a year's worth of email chains with him. And then last minute was like, please stop contacting me. I'm not going to be on your show. Wanted to be Nancy Drew, and so this is my way of doing it.
I applaud it because I went through a true crime phase very similar where I read everything, and then it just started to make me feel existentially conflicted and reminding me of my own mortality, so I had to stop reading it.
No, I can't get too deep in it. If I get too deep in it, then I don't sleep, and I'm like terrified that I'm going to be the Black Dahlia.
LA is one of those places where everything has a story, and 9 times out of 10, it's usually vaguely horrible, but it's intriguing at the same time.
Yeah, and it's like a city built on top of everything. And I lived in Beechwood Canyon, which is old Hollywood. It was like a mile under the Hollywood sign. So I was around all of these buildings that are historically protected. And I would just type in an address in Google and find out the person who invented the mid-century modern style in America lived in this house. And his wife was murdered in the garage. And like, it's just all over the city is random. I discovered Thelma Todd's Sidewalk Cafe on a hike, just on accident, just like walked past it.
That is amazing. But of course, we are doing what I have labeled the questionable Hollywood unsolved case. Right. Is it a crime? Is it not? There are many ones that we know definitely murder, you know, Black Dahlia, definitely murder. But I wanted to look at some of the ones that people have their theories on. Is it suicide? Is it something else? And we're not doing Marilyn, which because I figured Marilyn was too easy. So let's start with the one that is the oldest, which is Olive Thomas. Olive Thomas is an interesting figure because she's famous adjacent. She was a silent film actress and a model, but she's mostly known nowadays for being Mrs. Mary Pickford's sister-in-law.
Who died.
Exactly, who died under mysterious circumstances. She was a Ziegfeld girl. She had been in some risque shows, one of which was called The Midnight Frolic, which if I ever get a boat, I'm going to name it that, because that sounds really amazing. She met Jack Pickford, who was Mary Pickford's brother, in 1916. Mary Pickford, by this point, was one of the most, if not the most successful silent star at that time. And they were both kind of known as partiers. Frances Marion says that they were, quote, two innocent looking children. They were the gayest, wildest brats who ever stirred the stardust on Broadway. You gotta love how people were described back in this time period.
Oh, even, I loved it.
Even when it sounded like it was an insult. But they got married. It was a very tumultuous relationship where they would fight, then they would have these big lavish makeups with expensive gifts and trips. And then it all took a turn. They were vacationing. They were supposed to vacation together. They were constantly traveling, did not spend a lot of time together. They decided to take a second honeymoon and head to Paris. On September 5th of 1920, they went out for a night of carousing at this bistro in Paris, and they returned to their room at about 3 a.m. According to Jack Pickford, he fell asleep or was not even present, and Olive Thomas, who was intoxicated, ingested mercury bichloride liquid solution that had been prescribed to her husband to treat the sores caused by his chronic syphilis. Again, nothing really good sounds like comes out of this story.
Jack Pickford was just a mess.
Oh, yes, he was. And if memory serves, I think he died relatively young.
He did. I just think it's weird, like William Desmond Taylor's murder. He was starring in Tom Sawyer or Huckleberry Finn, whatever that is. He was playing Huck in that movie, directed by William Desmond Taylor. And William Desmond Taylor was murdered. And then not too long later, Olive Thomas mysteriously died.
The conventional wisdom was that she had thought the flask contained drinking water or sleeping pills. The label was in French. She didn't speak French. She drank the liquid. She freaked out. And Jack Pickford went to pick her up, took her to the hospital, where she died 5 days later. I'm assuming horrifically
like
painful death.
Yeah.
She dies, and there are rumors that start to go around about this incident, that she had attempted suicide after having a fight with him over his fidelities. There were rumors that she had tried to kill herself because Jack Pickford had given her syphilis. She was on drugs, that she was involved in, quote, champagne and cocaine orgies. Or the most common theory that leads to murder is that he killed her by tricking her into drinking this poison in an attempt to collect on insurance money. And nothing ever really came of it. He brought her body back to the U.S. very quickly. Supposedly, he tried to kill himself en route, but was talked out of it. There was a very quick funeral held. They didn't really investigate. She didn't leave a will, but her estate was valued at about $27,000. It was split between her mother, her brothers, and Jack Pickford. Adjusted for inflation, that's about $350,000. And supposedly, Jack Pickford relinquished his rights to his estate, giving it back to her mother. But all her stuff was sold off. That ended up netting some more money. First of all, we got to talk about silent Hollywood. You brought up William Desmond Taylor, but everybody was either involved in really weird crimes or had horrible deaths. William Desmond Taylor's murder.
Yeah.
Mabel Normand was a cocaine addict, which was the one that died in the sanitarium from like alcohol withdrawal. All of them had really, really messed up lives.
Right, but I think that speaks a lot to the culture in LA at the time. Like, because of the movie industry being what it was then, it was this new thing, and then you had the royalty, like you were saying, with Mary Pickford and everything. So you had the haves and the have-nots was such a huge thing, and once you became a have, like, you had everything. And I think that was one of the issues with Jack, is that he never felt satisfied in his life. Any work he got, he didn't feel like he earned. He felt like he got it because he was Mary Pickford's brother. I think that him marrying Olive Thomas was almost an act of rebellion because she was this scandalous person to bring into the Pickford family.
This is the one that I always feel, if it was murder, Jack Pickford really didn't benefit from it.
I personally think it was an accidental death. And if anyone listens to Hollywoodland Unsolved, just skip my episode on Olive Thomas because I give up halfway through and I'm like, you guys, I don't think she was murdered. I think this was an accidental death. But when I was doing the outline for the show, I just kept seeing that name come up. And Sarah's, do you read the Hollywood Forever blog? So I read the like 6-part series they did on that and was like, oh no, she was murdered. For sure, she was murdered. And then looking at it, more and seeing that Jack took her to the hospital as soon as he found her in the bathroom. She was only in the bathroom for like 20 minutes before he took her to the hospital. Like he was trying to kill her, he either immediately felt guilty. I don't think it was a murder. I genuinely think it was an accidental death. What you said about the bottle being in French, it looked also a lot like an aspirin bottle. The labels looked really similar. It was dark. She'd been drinking. They had probably done drugs.
This is one of those stories, and you get this a lot with stuff from the silent era. Because yes, police detecting was so different than what it is today, and we were so...
And there's no forensic.
There's no DNA. I mean, really, there wouldn't have been anything DNA-wise in this case to indicate. If it's a crime, it's pretty much the perfect one, because right, there's no way to prove or disprove. Jack Pickford got married, I think, two or three more times. All to mm-hmm. Ziegfeld girls, he pretty much married the same woman over and over yeah. again. He was in and out of the hospital for several years. Usually the result of what they're saying is either a nervous breakdown or just exhaustion, and he ended up dying in 1933. Mary Pickford lasted several more decades. This is the one that I always say, I think we want it to be something, and it's just not.
I agree. I think it was reckless. I think they were reckless. And I think this was a result of that. And what you were saying about how people died really terribly back then, we didn't know the stuff we know now. There wasn't the regulations that we have now, and there wasn't the medical care. And if he did have syphilis, treating it with mercury bichloride, they found out like 10 years later, doesn't do anything.
This is one of those cases where, as interesting and weird as it gets, like, they're weirder.
I think it's sad.
Like, it is.
I think it's really, because I do feel like that ruined Jack's life.
Considering the family history already with the Pickfords, and Mary Pickford was not, suffered from a lot of issues herself, virtually became a recluse as she got older, the Pickford clan was not a happy one.
I don't think a lot of people were in Hollywood. Yeah. Still don't think people are in Hollywood. I live here.
I think everybody's living like lives of quiet desperation still to this day. If you're going for like silent crime, I always say like, look up Ramon Navarro. That's a horrible, horrible murder that happened. I mean, it's mm-hmm. insane. But I have to throw out the weird deaths that I find interesting. Google Lupe Velez. Find out how Lupe Velez died. That poor woman.
Yeah, hers is so ridiculous. Ridiculous.
There's arguments that that was murder. And I was sitting there thinking, the poor woman drowned to death in her toilet bowl because she got drunk and passed out while vomiting in it.
And I heard that she was committing suicide, like wanted to commit suicide and do it in this like really tragic, beautiful
See,
way.
The story that I heard about Lupe Velez's death was that she had gotten drunk. She was sick because she was so drunk and was throwing up in her toilet and passed out simultaneously.
Okay, so mine's close to that. I heard that she wanted to commit suicide in this like beautiful Hollywood way, and she wanted to die beautifully. She wanted to die while she was beautiful in a beautiful way. So she took a bunch of pills and planned to die beautifully in her bed. And instead, the pills made her sick, and so she got up to puke and was like covered in puke and accidentally drowned herself in the toilet.
Either way, Lupe Velez went out horribly.
Like, no matter what way you dice it, that woman had a terrible death.
We ever talk top three worst celebrity demises in the classic era? That's about one. I don't really think you can get much worse than that. But let's talk about another lady whose death happened under questionable circumstances, who you've also done an episode on. Thelma Todd.
My favorite murder. I can't say murder, but
I think Unsolved Mysteries did an episode on this once, which is how I had heard about it. So Thelma Todd was an actress predominantly known for starring in comedies between 1926 and 1935. She'd worked with the Marx Brothers. She was more often paired up with Zazu Pitts, and she was a real entrepreneur. She knew that acting mm-hmm. was not going to last her very long. She opened up a cafe and was doing other things to essentially diversify for when the bottom dropped out of films. She also dated the wrong men, which everybody did in Hollywood. Everybody still does in Hollywood, I think. December 16th of 1935, she was found dead in her car inside the garage of a friend, the former wife of Thelma Todd's lover and business partner named Jewel Carmen. Her house is approximately a block from Thelma Todd's restaurant.
Super close. I have been to both. You can throw a pebble and hit Jewel Carmen's house from the top of the sidewalk cafe.
That is amazing. Her death was determined to have been caused by carbon monoxide because she had fell asleep with the car running and the garage door closed. Supposedly she had been locked out of her house. She wanted to stay warm in the car, and all of her friends generally seemed to go along with this. She had been out and about the night before with, she had a brief exchange with her ex-husband, Pat DiCicco, who was known for mob ties. But generally, she was in happy spirits. People didn't really think that it was a suicide. They concluded that her death was accidental, that she was either warming up the car to drive it or used the heater to keep herself warm. There was no real scandal in the autopsy report. There were no marks of violence. But there's always been this rumor that there were reports that she was seen standing outside the door, pounding or having some type of argument. What's your background with this, considering it's one of your favorites?
I have a couple of things that I think are weird in this story. First of all, the last person to say that they saw her alive was her driver, who dropped her off in front of Selmatud Sidewalk Cafe around 3:45 early Sunday morning. So she went out Saturday night to the Trocadero, and that was the last time people saw her. Dropped her off. Roland West, who was her business partner and Jewel Carmen's husband, wouldn't let her into the apartment. And they had had these fights before. And so what allegedly they say happened is she then walked up the hill to Jewel Carmen's house where her car was in the garage, went in the car and fell asleep in the car and died. What the autopsy report did show was that she had bruises on her neck, her nose was broken, and she had two broken ribs.
Which doesn't seem like somebody, that's somebody in pain.
You don't pass out in the car, Kristen, and break your ribs. Like, I
right.
don't care.
There are people that I don't think know how bones work, who said, you know, oh, the broken nose, when she fell, she hit her nose
right.
on
the
steering column.
Nose, yes. Yes, they say that the bruises on her neck, like post rigor mortis and whatever, but that is fine. I will accept that. But the broken ribs,
yeah.
I'm like, there's more going on there. And the original crime scene photos show her in the passenger seat of the car. And the official crime scene photos, the police crime scene photos, show her in the driver's seat of the car. That's weird. Second of all, the undigested peas and carrots that were found in her stomach is weird as well. She was last seen on Sunday morning at 3:45 a.m. Her body was found Monday morning at 9:30 a.m. The coroner's office said that the peas and carrots had to have been eaten 6 hours before she died, or 6 to 12 hours before she died. So that would have been 9 o'clock at night on Sunday night at the absolute latest. But she wasn't seen that all Sunday day.
There was also something about how it wasn't common to see the garage door closed. It was generally kept open.
Uh-huh. Yep. And
somebody you'd think would notice that, at least.
Yes. And she was supposed to go to some gay party on Sunday. And she called the woman and said, can I wear my evening gown? What I wore last night. And the woman is like, yeah, sure, that's fine, whatever, I don't care. And then she said, wait till you see who I'm bringing, you're going to die. And then never showed up. And the woman, her name was Martha, was very adamant that it was Thelma Todd, and she was not faking it because she described her maudlin silver evening gown.
And she was also dressed, her hair was all done up, all of
that.
Yeah,
her hair was done the same when her body was found. So one of the theories was, oh, well, they took her out and they killed her and they dressed her back in her same clothes to make it look like she died late Saturday night, early Sunday morning. Where I think she was kidnapped. And I think, which mobster was it? Lucky Luciano?
Lucky Luciano, yeah.
Who threatened her?
The most popular theory is that Lucky Luciano is responsible. He was operating out of Los Angeles, which again, you've seen any movie that's attempted to look at 1940s LA, you usually know he's always involved. Her restaurant would have been this prime location for him to set up shop for the gambling syndicate. And her ex-husband, Pat DiCicco, had mm-hmm. mob ties. So it's possible, they're saying, that they had crossed paths. Supposedly, she had had dinner with Lucky Luciano at one point, and he brought up gambling, and she was overheard to tell him in no uncertain terms that she was not interested.
Said over my dead body.
That's the worst thing you can say and then end up dead under mysterious circumstances.
Yes, in the 1940s in Hollywood, for
right.
sure. For sure. And allegedly, Luciano then said that can be arranged.
Mobsters really need to get new lines because they always seem to repeat the same things. But supposedly, it didn't help the fact that he left Los Angeles and never came back right yeah. around the same time.
Like 3 days after.
I guess the rumor is that there's a lot of inconsistencies and contradictions. supposedly Roland West had ties to the mafia. He was the one trying to coax her to go along with this, so he became a suspect.
He should have been. He was a skeezball.
The theory is that he and some gangsters were waiting for her, that she had run into him and some of his associates, so that explains why she would have gone out with him to wherever she had eaten within that time period. What is your theory? I guess lay out the crime for us in terms of
so
A to B.
Her and Roland West had plans to meet at the cafe at 2:05 after she was done with her social engagement at the Trocadero in West Hollywood. And she said, well, I'll be there at 2:05, taunting him a little bit because he's like, don't be late, you're always late. So instead she shows up after 3:45 in the morning. Allegedly, she was banging on the doors. She was pissed. He wouldn't let her in. I think that's true. What I think then happened is Luciano or someone from Luciano picked her up and took her elsewhere and entertained her for 12 hours. I think that she did make the phone call to Martha. I did think she fully intended on bringing Lucky Luciano or somebody like that to this barbecue. I don't think she thought she was in any danger. Pacifico might have been there as well. I think that she was roughed up a little bit because he wanted her cafe for the gambling. And when she said no, they knocked her out and put her in the car, turned the car on. And so it technically was an accidental death that they intended to, but they intended to kill her that way. And it worked.
Right. And I think a lot of people assume, you know, gangsters, it's all got to be gunshot wound to the head or something out of casino. It really helps your case if you just do something quiet and make it look like, again, perfect crime, really,
yep.
Because there's
yeah.
no way to prove.
Yeah. And they didn't dust for prints. They didn't. It was a really, really, really swift ruling of an accidental death. There is a half-smudged handprint on the car that they never identified who it belonged to. At that time, you could buy out the police. Look at the Black Dahlia case.
The police were, again, if you watch any TV show or movie about 1940s LA, cops never come out looking good in those.
No. So I definitely think it was a mob hit.
Definitely thought there's just enough evidence to make me disbelieve. I can't say the way that it happened is the way it happened. Even though I think they also said too, like carbon monoxide poisoning that turns your skin a certain color and that was present. We're not saying she didn't die of carbon monoxide poisoning. The intent is what we're arguing.
I think she did die of carbon monoxide
yeah.
poisoning.
I think that what most people argue nowadays isn't cause of death, intention of death is
yes.
what is happening, which is a wonderful segue into our next one that I wanted to talk about, which is Natalie Wood. This is another one that a lot of people have very, very fevered opinions on. And I'm one of them because I'm a big Natalie Wood fan. I love Natalie Wood. I think she was so great. One of the few child stars that does not have a Judy Garland level backstory of tragedy and sadness. Although her death is sad. The person, she wasn't doing drugs and all of that. So good for her.
Mm-hmm.
But her death has always been very questionable. She ended up drowning after a weekend boat trip to Catalina Island on board her boat, the Splendor. Many of the circumstances are very muddy and undetermined. She was with her husband, Robert Wagner. She was with Christopher Walken, who was a co-star, and rumored fling on a film that she had made with him and the captain of the boat, Dennis Davern, in 1981. Her body ended up being recovered at 8 a.m. on November 29th, a mile away from the boat with a small inflatable dinghy named the Valiant that was beached nearby. And according to Robert Wagner, when he went to bed, Natalie Wood was not there. The autopsy report said that she had bruises on her body and her arms, as well as an abrasion on her left cheek. And a lot of people have theories about things that I don't necessarily know they should be arguing about. Thelma Todd, nobody's arguing cause of death. I'm not saying Natalie Wood drowned. I want to argue about intention.
Yeah.
Because the thing that always people always bring up, Natalie Wood did not like water. She didn't like dark water. It's a bit of a misnomer. She was afraid of water she could not see the bottom of. She would get in the water if you coaxed her, and she was a fan of water. She just didn't like being in water that she couldn't see the bottom of. Most people say, well, she never would have gotten in this little dinghy. The rumor is that she got in the dinghy. She ended up falling out through reasons, and that because of the heavy down jacket she was wearing, it quickly became waterlogged and she could not pull herself into the boat. Now, that takes in some questions, because it would have been easier for her to reach the step ladder to get back onto the yacht than it would have been for her to pull herself up onto the boat. The leading theory is that she was trying to push the boat to the beach, which, again, is confusing. A lot of people say, well, she had a blood alcohol level of 0.14, so she was intoxicated. My argument is, and the theory is, that there was a fight between her and Robert Wagner, whether it was about this rumored affair that she had with Christopher Walken, we're not sure, and that she stormed off. Now, people say she had bruises on her body that were not consistent with fighting to get back into a boat. Did she get slapped around? I don't want Robert Wagner to sue me, so I'm not going to say yes or no, but there are theories. My argument is that she left the boat to get away from him and ended up slipping and was drowning. My issue then becomes, did anybody hear her and decide, she's fine? Yeah, I think that's true. I think that in many instances, this was a case of somebody might have thought she was in trouble, but really didn't care enough to check. What is your thought?
Why did Robert Wagner tell them to not turn the searchlights on?
That's my argument. There was no attempt to turn the searchlights on. There was no attempt to go look for her.
He waited like 3 or 4 hours to report her missing.
There were people that were on the beach that supposedly heard a woman screaming. Nobody bothered to call 911. You had Thomas Noguchi, who was the medical examiner at the time, and supposedly he was the one who came up with this theory that she had gotten weighed down by the coat because she was drunk, so she wasn't able to get back into the boat. And then he ended up revising those statements later. I mean, this was a guy that had been notorious for having controversy follow him around. I wouldn't say she's murdered. I think maybe there's some manslaughter issues that you go in here, because I have never believed that nobody thought, maybe I should go look.
I don't know. This one, I don't know enough about. And like I said before, I don't like researching murder where people are still alive. That could come back, like you said, and sue you. There is some foul play in this story. No matter what way you dice it, not calling the police for 3 hours is wrong. Not turning on the searchlights is wrong. Wherever she got the bruises is wrong. There is a theory that she was knocked out on the boat and pushed over on the boat, and the down jacket is what weighed her down. There's just too much. Who was the one on the ship? Paul Byrne. Anything that happens on a boat,
nothing good ever happens if you're a Hollywood star or associated.
Nothing good ever happens on a boat. But also, those are the only people that actually know. I think it's all too muddled at this point for anybody to say truthfully what happened.
The people that were present, Dennis Darvern, who was the captain, is considered an unreliable witness. He's always been willing to tell his story, quote unquote, for money. Lana Wood, who is Natalie Wood's sister, changes her theories. There are rumors that money is involved, and she changes her mind on her sister's death based on that. This is one of the few cases. There was a 30-year hiatus. They reopened this case in 2011 after Dennis Davern publicly stated that he lied to the police during the initial investigation, and that he said that Wood and Wagner had been arguing, and he pretty much accused Robert Wagner of murder. The LA Chief County Medical Examiner amended her death certificate and changed the cause of death from accidental drowning to, quote, drowning and other undetermined factors. And that included a statement that the circumstances of how she ended up in the water are not clearly established. But no one will talk about the case further from the police department.
What's Christopher Walken's stance on this?
Christopher Walken does not talk about this. And I think the rumor is you're not supposed to ask him about it.
Of course.
I want to say he's been asked about her. He's talked about her in incredibly nice terms, but he will not talk about that night. Supposedly, he was interviewed by the police. They have statements from him. But anybody who has asked him since, he has not said anything. At least nothing that I've seen.
Yeah, I couldn't find anything about that, which is so interesting because he's still such a prevalent figure in the entertainment industry. That's weird.
Very, very odd. And in 2011, Christopher Walken actually hired a lawyer when the authorities reopened the case. The LAPD made a point of saying he was not a suspect. But he retained counsel, which is never good. Robert Wagner's always said that he didn't have anything. He's become the gatekeeper for her memory. Her children have also said that they have no reason to believe that this is anything more than a very tragic accident. My argument always is I definitely think she drowned. The question is what everybody wants to know. Why did she end up in that water that night?
I mean, I can also see her being mad in a fight with her husband. I am in a relationship, I know exactly how this, you get mad, you want to leave, you want to do like this dramatic thing. And I can see her getting in the boat in the middle of the night and being like, all right, like, forget this. I don't need this. Making her point and storming out and having stuff go awry with her down jacket and her not really knowing how to operate the boat and being drunk and it being the middle of the night.
There's just as much argument for each. And the thing is that so much time has passed. Nothing will ever get, they wanted to reinvestigate at this point. I don't even know if they could do that because it's not like they have the boat. I'm assuming the boat, there's nothing there anymore. Stranger things have happened, but this one, I'm not saying that it was outright murder, but
yeah.
Do I think maybe there might have been some people who had some hurt feelings and thought, I'm just not going to do anything, and assume that it was going to turn out all right? Maybe there were assumptions that she was in the boat and she was going to make it back to shore and there was no reason to worry. We'll never know. But
well,
that's the one that always gets me.
I think everyone is involved. And I think that's why Christopher Walken doesn't want to talk about it.
And that could very well be true. Exactly. We'll never know until somebody dies and decides to write something. That's when I think, once all the players are gone.
You know, the deathbed confession.
Exactly. That would be something. I have no idea, but I get asked by people, because I go to the Turner Classic Movies Film Festival, and everybody said, well, if Robert Wagner shows up, are you going to interview him? Are you going to talk to him? I'm like, I would talk to him, but I would have to give him the side eye. And it's also very ironic, because right around the time that she died, and again, this is one of those, I had never thought that this was a controversial death, but I had overheard a conversation somebody was having at the TCM Film Festival a couple years ago, and I was like, really? But right around the time Natalie Wood died, William Holden had died. William Holden was dating Stephanie Powers, who was working with Robert Wagner at the time on Heart to Heart. Thomas Noguchi kind of got in trouble for this as well. This is part of the thing that led to the downfall of his career. William Holden had died. Allegedly, he had gotten very drunk and fell and hit his head on a coffee table and died of essentially like a subdural hematoma.
Hit it on the side of a dresser.
It was a table of some kind. He had hit
it. Which I think is completely false.
The argument was is that he hit his head with such force that it physically moved this giant dresser or whatever across the room.
And had blood on the floor and on the bed.
I did not ever hear that this was a controversial death. The rumor that I overheard at the film festival was that the mob had killed him because he owed them money. I was like, really? I've never heard this story before. How did I not know this? I'm a huge William Holden fan. It doesn't help Robert Wagner's case. I'm not saying he had anything to do with that. I'm just saying it, like, doesn't help. You gotta love how coincidental everything plays out.
Hollywood is so incestuous. It's like the Kardashians and the O.J. Simpson case. And Jack Pickford and Olive Thomas and William Desmond Taylor. And
it's all very weird and twisty and turny. Before we close it out, I figured we could briefly share top three favorite unsolved cases. What are your three from the classic era?
Well, the Black Dahlia is my all-time favorite. That's another one that is genuinely the perfect case. And that killer wanted to get caught, and they couldn't do it. So the Black Dahlia is number one, Thelma Todd is number two, and the murder in Greystone Mansion, or the mysterious death in Greystone Mansion.
I have heard that. I really want to go to Greystone one day because
it's beautiful.
Sounds amazing. Natalie Wood's my one, even though it's not a murder per se, but it's always been unsolved to me in terms of definitive things.
Mysterious death. Good enough.
My number two, I've always said George Reeves. Is very, very interesting to me.
Yep, he's a popular one too.
The original Superman, was he killed by his girlfriend? Did he kill himself? Or was he murdered by Eddie Mannix's wife or Eddie Mannix himself, who was the Hollywood fixer at the time? If you really want a good summation of that case, go look at the Ben Affleck movie, Hollywoodland. I think that does a really good job of giving the differing theories. And my number three is Carol Landis. That's not a case that gets a lot of traction.
Yeah.
Carol Landis was not a big name in any way, shape, or form. She was a suicide, allegedly, quote unquote. She was supposedly so crushed when Rex Harrison refused to divorce his wife for her that she killed herself by taking an overdose of Secanol. I've always thought that was suspicious. Rex Harrison was the last person to see her alive before she committed suicide. He also found her the next afternoon. He waited several hours before calling a doctor or the police. Supposedly, she left suicide notes for her mother and for him but he denied knowing anything about her being suicidal and that he didn't know about the existence of a suicide note. And supposedly her family maintains a website that has been calling for a reinvestigation into the case. This is one of those, again, I don't think it's outright murder, but do I think that Rex Harrison, who was known for being kind of a jerk, might have knew what buttons to push and hope that something would happen? Mm-hmm. Maybe.
I think anytime someone waits to contact the authorities,
you're getting the story straight.
For sure. And there is absolutely, you need to not look at whatever they're saying. You need to look at the opposite of it. Because that's how Greystone Mansion is, too. They waited like 5 hours to call for an ambulance.
There is so much questionable in that case. And I don't know if her family is maintaining that website anymore. I remember finding it a couple years ago. Yeah, that one is very interesting, despite the fact that I've seen a few Carol Landis movies, and she's not that great. It's interesting to think of what could have been. We're going to close this out, listeners. Of course, you can send me your favorite unsolved Hollywood crimes or anything you want to say to ticklishbiz@gmail.com, and I will read them on the next episode. Ansley, I would like to thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. How can fans find out more about your podcast and get in touch with you online?
HollywoodLandsPod.com. Everything is on there, the maps, the addresses, a contact form. And it was so great to talk to you, too. I don't know how we haven't connected.
The classic film podcast world is so small that we really need to start a group or a Slack channel or something.
That'll close out this edition of Ticklish Business. You can listen to Ticklish Business a multitude of ways, either directly at ticklishbusiness.podbean.com, via Stitcher Radio and Player FM, or on iTunes. If you are listening via iTunes, please help the podcast out by leaving a rating and review. As always, you can contact me directly with questions, suggestions, comments to ticklishbiz, that's B-I-Z, @gmail.com, or visit me at my official website, where I discuss classic films somewhat regularly, journeysinclassicfilm.com. The podcast is also on Twitter @ticklish_biz. Want to listen to episodes early or have me review your favorite film? Then consider supporting Ticklish Business via Patreon. I have a wealth of amazing perks, and all your donations go right back into making Ticklish Business the premier classic film podcast. If you're interested in becoming a patron, just head over to patreon.com/ticklishbiz. Next time, Halloween comes to a close as Kimberly Pierce and I visit Vincent Price and the house on Haunted Hill. Till next time.